You know, today we're going to be taking a look at what it means to be a soldier and how serving actually grows our capacity as a follower of Christ, as an individual. And, you know, as you're watching those images right there, you know, it's a little odd. I mean, you're like, man, why are soldiers doing all of these things? Well, today we're going to be taking a look at what it means when we consider ourselves soldiers. In fact, the Bible talks about that, about when we serve, we are actually soldiers. And so the question I want us to look at today is, how does that make us strong? How does that grow our capacity? You know, over the last few weeks, we've been doing training exercises. Many of you trained last week. You did some really odd, out-of-the-box things that helped you grow in your capacity this last week. In fact, this little card right here was one of the things that I did. I actually poked fun at this one last week, skip a meal. I was joking with actually skipping a card instead. But I actually did this. I don't know how many of you skipped a meal this week, but I'm glad that I did, because on the day when I chose to use my time instead of eating to connect with God and then to experience some of the hunger pangs that come after that, and every time I experience those, to just use that moment to say, God, you know, I'm trusting you. Something really interesting happened. I found I was very vulnerable. I don't know about you, but when I miss a meal, I find myself kind of weak. I find myself vulnerable, not just physically, but emotionally, kind of even spiritually at times. I just feel a whole different sense, and it brought just this real awareness of my need to depend on God, and it actually grew me. I actually saw things in my life. I saw things even going on in that day that I don't know that otherwise I would have seen. So I'm grateful that we did that. And so we've passed training, and today we're taking a look at what it means to be a soldier, and I want to kind of explore the battlefield today. In fact, in Paul's second letter to Timothy, here's how he kind of says this to him. He says, join with me in suffering like a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No one suffering as a soldier gets involved in civilian affairs. Rather, they try to please their commanding officer. And so, you know, this week, our challenges, the things we're going to be doing, and if you're a guest with us today, by the way, we have some decks of cards that have cards like this in it, and there are cards for each of the themes of the weeks that we're going through during this challenge, and you can pick one up on your way out today at Connection Point, out by the front doors, and these are kind of the things that give us rhythm, help us experience things, grow in our capacity on these fronts. And I looked ahead, and I thought, you know, this is going to be an interesting week, because when we think of serving serving others, interesting things come to mind. One of the things you're going to have the opportunity to do is to be a blessing ninja, right? Everybody wants to do that. You're going to identify, you know, someone, a number of people that you could bless somehow. Then you're going to kind of say, what are the needs that they have? And what's one way that I could go stealth this week and just kind of meet that need anonymously? And so another one, value everyone. You'll have the opportunity to in one day, say, you know, what if every person I meet today is the most important person in the world? How would that change the way I interact with them? How would that change the way I serve with them? And then there's always the hard one, the one that, you know, we look at and we're like, I just don't want to do this one. This is going to be it for me this week. Today, be on the lookout for one place where you're fighting to get your own way and intentionally give in. I don't like to do that, to be really honest. I don't like to do that. And so, you know, so these are going to be hard, and these are going to be the things that are going to help us to see that, you know, when we're a soldier, when we are a follower of Christ, we begin taking orders from someone else outside of ourselves. And so, before we dive any deeper into that, each week we've been taking a look at a video, at a story of a star athlete when it comes to each of these disciplines, and today we're going to take a look at a guy by the name of Justin. And Justin it just kind of captures the whole essence of what it means to serve. In fact, He's in the 40 under 40 business leaders in Cincinnati that have high potential, that are kind of growing, the new growing leaders in that segment of the city. He works for Procter & Gamble, serves at his home church, serves in his community, serves with his family. And so take a look at his story, because he kind of sets the tone for us this morning. Take a look at the screens.
When I was growing up, serving wasn't a big part of my life until I got more involved in the Boy Scouts. The Scout Law, I know, talked about, you know, serving others, and on my honor, I would do my best to serve others. Our first Scout Master, Mr. Rattray, he would give his time every Monday when we had Boy Scouts at the church, and every month for our monthly campouts, he'd be there, he'd drive us, and he'd coordinate the trips and all that. And I just really appreciated this, all the time he spent with me and the rest of the guys, just teaching us things from Boy Scouts, whether it's knot tying, or he was a big guy in the sailing, so he took us on sailing trips and caving and rappelling, and really throughout all that, it just taught us how to be men. One of the biggest things was I was in an organization that enabled me to take a trip to a camp in Michigan. This was Camp Minnewanka. This was an international leadership camp, and that I would say was an experience that really altered my life and how I think about serving. The camp really talked to you about a way of living your life, you know, from a spiritual perspective, from a physical perspective, from a mental perspective, and it talked about the importance of service, of servant leadership, and there were students there from all over the world and from all walks of life, and you really got to do service with these guys. And there was a quote from a book of the founder of this camp, and the quote is, "Never give up until you have released your unused capacity for service and share your gift with others. One enkindled spirit can set hundreds on fire." As I was listening to this and really internalizing this, it really made me think that as an individual, we may not think that we can make a difference, but we really can. And from there, it really sparked in me the fact that even though I'm one person, I do have gifts that God's given me, and I can make a difference. And I think that really was the spark that's kind of got me on my path to service. I always try and see, you know, where can I make a difference? Where can I add value? I feel like the more I volunteer, the more rooted in. But most importantly, just support. I try and go that extra mile and try and go a little deeper and have a more serious conversation and not just keep it at the surface and get vulnerable. By listening to them and just receiving what they're saying and being that ear for them to talk to, I think that really just demonstrates service and making it not about yourself but about that other person. He sent me a text back like later that night saying, "Hey, you know, things weren't as bad as they seemed. I really appreciate the time that you took to talk." And it was a matter of just, you know, stopping and engaging. I could have easily said, "You know, I don't have time. I'm on my way home. I got to go." But I really saw that as a moment where someone was reaching out. And it's hard for guys to reach out to other guys and talk like that. And I feel like it helped. And I feel like for us, it brought us a little bit closer together. Marriage and service go hand in hand. I feel like what we've been able to do is really appreciate the gifts that we each bring to the marriage. And there are times when I am low and I submit myself to her, specifically I'd say around our son. For me, I'm like, "Oh, I know everything, I got it figured out," but I really don't. She is an awesome mom, and she just has this unique knack of knowing how to take care of him. For me, serving teaches me that God loves us, and he wants us to love our neighbors and love the rest of the world like he loves us. When I serve, I get much more than I give. I realize that it's not about me. I realize that I'm helping, you know, a broader community. And for me, I realize that it makes me feel like I'm part of something bigger. I should continue to serve, not out of obligation, but just out of love and my passion for service.
Great story of what it looks like to be a soldier. I mean, that's what it means right there. You know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, he writes again to another group of people. He's always writing these letters. And he writes this group in Philippi. It's called the book of Philippians. And here's what he says to this group of people. Different setting, different culture, kind of the same message. He says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking into your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. and your relationships with one another have the same attitude of the mind Jesus Christ had, who being the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage, but rather he made himself nothing, taking on the role as a servant. Now, I don't know about you, but man, that is hard to do. It's hard to do because if you're like me, I like to be the best. I like to be the best. I don't like to be the least. You know, there's something about being the best that pumps me up. I mean, there's something about when I'm like at the top of my game and I know I'm at the top of my game that it really lifts me up. And there are times in my life where I can like posture myself and look like I'm the least. I can be like, oh, yeah, you know, you're much better than I am. But man, in my mind, I'm being really honest with you. I'm like, I'm the best. All right? I mean, we all want to be better, right? I mean, you know, last year, even at home, my daughter brought a project home from school, a little under a year ago, and it was a spelling project. She'd pick one spelling word, and she had to make a costume out of that spelling word. It was a simple project, right? So she looked over the list. I'm like, Macy, what are you going to pick? And your mom's coaching her, and Macy came up with a great word, the word illuminate. And I'm like, Macy, that's awesome. What do you think you want to do with that? And she's like, I want to get a poster board, Dad, and I want to cut this little light bulb out of it, write illuminate, and just kind of, you know, tape it to my chest, because they're going to, like, do this parade around the school. I'm like, Macy, that's a great idea. How about this? How about some foam core? Big piece of foam core. We put a huge light bulb on the front of you. We make it a sandwich sign, so there's one on the back. And guess what, Macy? I used to work for an event planner, and we did bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs. We'd cut out the kids' names in this foam core, drill holes in the back, and punch Christmas lights through it. We could, like, illuminate this light bulb. I mean, this would be fantastic. It'd be the best project ever. Her eyes, she's, like, excited. We go to Lowe's, get all the equipment. Julie comes home, and she's like, what happened to the light bulb? The simple little Macy's poster board. And I'm like, it wasn't good enough. And that's just how I am. I mean, I don't know if you're that way, but I always want to be the best. I don't care if I'm playing words with friends. I want to win. I want to be the best. I the people that play against me, they're kind of the same way. You know, we were sitting, under a year ago, got an email from our school. I mean, you know, it's not just in work. I mean, we all show with this at work, but, I got this email from the school that said, hey, we're looking for more volunteers for school clubs. After school clubs. And Julie looked at me and she said, hey, Kurt, you could do that. And I'm like, oh man, Julie, I volunteered a lot over there. It's a crazy time in our life right now. And she said, well, you could do that though. I mean, it's only four times for the next, 4 weeks. And I'm like, well, what could I do? I mean, what gift do I have that kids would want to come to a club after school and participate in? She said, balloon animals. I'm like, balloon animals? And you see, I'd learned to do balloon animals like a year and a half ago for a kid's birthday party. One of my kids' birthday parties on YouTube, of all places. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if kids are like that. And then here was the dagger right here. She said, Kurt, if you do that, man, you will be the dad of the year. It had me sold. I'm like, count me in. I want to be the best. I want to be the dad of the year. You know, that's how I work. I want to be the best. I don't like being the least. When I'm the least, I mean, I feel deflated at times. I mean, I just have these feelings that I don't like. And so, you know, this is what Paul is talking about right here. Let's read it again. Philippians chapter 2. Listen, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, skipping down to verse 5. Have the same attitude as the mind of Christ. He being the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant. I don't know about you, but when I read that, I think nothing is pretty close to last. Right? I mean, nothing is like at the bottom. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, man, I like to be the best. And yet Jesus, through Paul, is calling me right here to be the last. He's saying I should be like him. And that's a little weird, right? I mean, it's a little weird. I mean, you know, we're not talking like, you know, words with friends here. We're not talking school projects now. We're talking, this is God, the most powerful being in the entire universe, in all that exists. And if we're talking a military analogy today, we're talking about being soldiers, then this is our commanding officer. I mean, this is the guy in charge. The guy that's running the whole army, and he's coming to us, he's saying, hey, I'm the top guy. If you want to be in my army, I'm recruiting people for my army. When you join my army, if you want to win, he says, you know what he says? He says, if you want to win, you have to lose, and you have to put up the white flag and surrender. Now, that's a little odd to me. I don't know if it's odd to you, but you know, it shouldn't be odd because, I mean, I'm always amazed when I think back to the way that Jesus came into the world. I mean, when you think about how he came into this world, you know, people were expecting this powerful entry that somebody's going to come and turn heads and take captives and put people into the rightful place, and he disappoints everyone. I mean, what does he do? He comes as the least. He comes as a kid of all people. comes as a crying little baby, and we're going to look more at that over the next month or so. But see, everything about what Jesus is about, he says, hey, I want you to follow my example of what it means to be the least. And so the first piece of this picture I want to create for us today, this first piece of how serving makes us stronger is in the fact that Jesus came and served us first. I mean, he didn't come and tell us to serve. He came and did it. He came and did it. And when I think about serving, this is where it starts right here. I mean, I think of the fact that I got served first. And, you know, I think about this whole idea of how I want to be best. And I like to be first. I don't like to be last. I find a little comfort in these conversations that Jesus has with his friends. We see a few of these and I read them and I'm like, oh man, these are guys who lived with him. I mean, they're like taking in his teachings every day. He's taking little moments to have teaching moments with them, and they're not getting it. I mean, this has been like 3 years with them, and they're still kind of not getting it. And so he has this episode, this little occurrence with the mother of James and John. And James and John are two of the disciples, and their mom comes to Jesus, and she's like, hey, Jesus, I've got a favor to ask of you. And she says, you know, when you come into your kingdom, and she's thinking like wealth, power, prestige, when you come into all of this, Jesus, when you come into your kingdom, I just wondered if you could maybe find a special place for my two sons. Now, you can imagine how the other 10 felt when they heard this. All right, I mean, in my home, when we're pouring like drinks at dinner, and you know, one of our kids gets like an ounce of soda more than the other, I mean, everybody's crying foul. Why do they get more? You like them more than you like me. And, you know, I told you did earlier when you made this. I mean, it just goes on and on. I mean, the 10 are like irate right here. They're like, what about us? What they're really saying is, what about me? What about me right here? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm this way. I'm this way when it comes to my work. I'm this way when it comes to my life. I was thinking the other day, you know, I struggle with this all the time. I mean, I get this magazine from the school that I graduated from, the college I graduated from. It's called the Andersonian. And it's kind of an update magazine, but in the back, there's this nice little section that gives updates on all the people that have ever graduated from this institution. And so, you know, casually every now and then, I'll open that up and I'll look at the years I was there to see if there are people that I know. And as I'm reading through that, they'll talk about, you know, somebody had a baby or got married. It'll talk about a promotion someone got, and I'll see that. I'm like, oh man, are they getting ahead of me? I mean, are they like doing better than I am? That's how I think. I mean, I remember going through salary negotiations with one of my former employers, benefit negotiations, and you know, those are supposed to be private, right? They're not. I mean, everybody knows that stuff leaks out, and I remember hearing someone else in a similar role to me was making more than I was, and immediately I'm kind of like, whoa, why is this going this way? I mean, do they not value me as much as this person? You know, I think about, you know, when we first started Crosspoint. I mean, you know, I had a couple other friends at the same time that were starting churches in other parts of the country. And I kind of stayed in touch with them. I'd kind of track with them. Every now and then I would research them. And I'd be like, oh, I wonder how good they're doing. I wonder if they've grown as much as we have. I wonder if they're as developed as we are. I wonder if they're as close to having property as we are. I mean, you know, it never ends. It's crazy. This is how we determine if I'm the best, if I'm more successful, if I'm lesser than someone else. It gets crazy. It never ends. And so James and John, they're going through the same thing. I mean, their mom, she goes to Jesus, she's like, Jesus, could you find a special place for my two sons? And how does Jesus respond to them? Here's what Jesus says. He hears the mumblings of all the other disciples. I mean, the other 10, they're irate at this. They're like, what kind of special people do you think you are to get privileges like that? And Jesus goes to the mom. He's like, hey, mom, you know, I know you asked if there could be a special place for your two sons, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if you really understand what you're asking. I really don't. And so he gets all of them together, and he kind of does a teaching moment right here, and we see this in Matthew's recording of Jesus' life in chapter 20. It says, Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them, and their high officials exercised authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. And right after he tells them this, you know what he does? He actually goes and shows them. You see, right after this conversation, they go into this room where they were preparing for a meal. And this wasn't just any meal. This was the Passover meal. This was a big deal. This happened one time a year. And so they're going up into this room to get the room prepared. And whenever they would do this, they would hire someone to come and clean them up. You know, you see, they didn't have freeways. They didn't have expressways, paved roads like you and I have. They walked everywhere they went. They wore sandals, but they had dusty feet, dirty feet. You know, you're getting sweaty. You know, the dust is sticking. You're getting, you know, muddy feet even on a dry day. And so, you know, they would hire hire someone to come in and actually clean their lower extremities. You know, because even when they sat at a table, it wasn't like you and I. You know, we kind of pull up to a table and we wash our hands, right? Wash our hands because that's what's up here that we're eating with. But our feet are underneath the table. Not so with them. When they would eat a meal, they would actually come into a room that kind of like had all these pillows or mattress kinds of things on the floor, and they actually reclined when they ate. They kind of laid around and they didn't have a table like we have. And so it wouldn't be uncommon for someone's feet, somebody's dirty, grimy feet, to actually be right near someone's mouth while they're eating. And so the disciples right here, they look around and they realize nobody's arranged for this. Nobody's arranged for somebody to come and clean our feet off and allow us to like eat together. And you know what? Nobody says a thing. I mean, they just watched James and John over here. You know, their mom asking if they could have a special place, and they're still grumbling about it. And so everybody's like, oh man, I'm not saying anything, because if I take the role of doing that, I mean, if I take the role of a servant of actually washing everybody's feet in this room, man, I will be pigeonholed as the least forever. I mean, I'm not doing that. I'm going to show that I'm the greatest in this room. Now, you may have heard this story before. You may have heard how this goes. If you haven't, here's what happens. Jesus actually does it. When he gets up, he takes a towel and a basin of water, and he gets down on his knees, and he begins to wash their feet one by one. All 11 of them, including the traitor, the one who's going to be his traitor in just merely a couple hours. I mean, he washes them one by one. He cleans them up. And just so he doesn't miss the point at the end, here's what he says in John chapter 13. He says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you." So Jesus, I mean, picks up a freaking towel. And we're still talking about it today. And with this towel, he redefines greatness. He redefines what it means to be great. And I was thinking about this. I was thinking, you know, when in my life, I mean, when, you know, have I really been at that place where I'm struggling, man? I'm struggling with, man, I want to be great. I want to be great. And yet, it requires me becoming the least. And it took me back to my sophomore year in college. When I was in my sophomore year in college, I got this letter from the registrar. It was an amazing letter. I don't believe anybody's ever got one before. It said something to the effect of, "We can't take your money any longer." And I thought, well, that's crazy. I thought that's all universities did was want to take your money. I mean, why in the world would they send me a letter saying we can't take your money anymore? And then I read on and it said, well, you've taken all the liberal arts classes. Until you declare a major, there's really nothing else you can take. And that made sense to me. But, I got this letter, and you see, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I didn't know what my life calling was. You see, I'd grown up in a pastor's home. I grew up watching my dad be a pastor. And I saw my dad really with pretty good business skills, pretty good leadership skills. I saw him excel at that. And, he, as a business person, I mean, he could have run with any business leaders of the day. I mean, he could have done that. And yet he accepted this call to be a pastor. And with that, I mean, you know, when you accept that call, I mean, you no longer are calling the shots for yourself. I mean, this is like you're a soldier. God is directing you, and you do what your commanding officer says. And so I can remember growing up. I mean, Dad was called to some small churches to go into them and to help him get off the ground. I can remember getting up at 2 a.m. with my dad and going out on his paper route, delivering Indianapolis Stars on the east side of Indianapolis from 2 a.m. till 6 a.m. I mean, I'd ride around this little hatchback Chevette with him. He'd put papers in the mailboxes, go home, take a shower, and he'd go to church and do his real job. I mean, I remember that. I remember him doing those things just to make ends meet. That was just a part of what he was called to at that point in his life. And so when I went to college, I'm like, man, God, I feel like I can do more than that. I felt like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I feel like, God, I've got a lot of skill sets. I've kind of always had this knack that anything I bend my life to, I can pretty much do. I mean, it's just something, you know, in high school it was sports. I mean, I wanted to be a great athlete, and I was decent. I mean, but, you know, I was the captain of my baseball team, my basketball team. I bent my life to it. I could accomplish it. I was pretty good academically. But I didn't bend my life to it. And so, you know, I was great on standardized tests, but, you know, my mom would look at that, and I was like a solid 2.3 GPA student all the way through high school. And I'd say, Mom, there is a lot of fun between an A and a C. A lot of fun. I mean, it's enough for me to stay on the court right here. But there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun. And so I'm at college, and I just don't know what I want to do. I'm looking at business, you know, the business program. I'm looking at finance. I'm looking at IT and computer programming. It was a really big trend at that time, back in the mid-90s. And I'm looking at everything. Nothing's coming about. And don't misunderstand. It wasn't just about me. At least I didn't think it was. I mean, I'm like, you know, God, I want to do something big so I can be a blessing to you. I want to be successful. I want to be in a place where I have some prestige, some power, some success, so I can be generous and I can touch people's lives. I didn't want to work in the church. I want to be out in the workplace with people who really don't know Jesus. And I'm saying all these things to God. In fact, I even had a conversation with God. I'm like, God, you know, you should really be privileged to have me on your team. I mean, let's be honest, God. Let's be honest. I mean, you don't come across people like me too often. Talk about vain conceit, all right? Talk about vain conceit and selfish ambition. I learned something through that process. You know what I learned? I learned that wanting to serve is just a piece of it. It's just a piece of the puzzle. It's just a piece of the equation. What Jesus is telling us right here is something far more radical than that. He's saying, hey, I want you to surrender. I want you to surrender. And I hear that. I'm like, whoa, what does it mean to surrender? You see, his key, what he's talking about right here, what he's telling us, is if you really want to experience freedom, if you really want to experience what that looks like, you're not only serving, but you're surrendering. I mean, you're waving the white flag. You're saying, hey, I'm no longer following and directing my life. And that's how we break free. And one of the reasons I think he did this is because he knows how hard we hang on to selfish ambition. He knows how we want to be seen as the greatest and the best. He knows how we like to self-promote ourselves. He knows how tough it's going to be. And so he gives us this radical, radical call. You see, the only way we get free of that, the only way we get free of those things, free of the worry to constantly be better than everybody around us, to constantly be self-promoting ourselves, to constantly be not worrying about, man, am I getting taken advantage of this? Is the person next to me making more? Do they have a better office than I do? Do they have more of a window view than I have? The only way we get free of this is to say no to that stuff and to say yes to somebody else. To say yes to somebody else's stuff, to somebody else's agenda, to somebody else's commands, to somebody else's reputation. You see, when you get to the point where you don't care if you're taken advantage of anymore, because you've just given that up, you've decided it doesn't matter because you report to a different officer, man, that's when you're free. That's when you're free. So I learned that, man, it's a big difference. Deciding to serve and being a servant are enormously different things. You see, when you decide to serve, you're still in charge. I mean, you're like, oh, I'm going to give a little of my time. I want to do good. I want to make a difference. I want to be a blessing to people. And that's a really good thing. When you decide to give of your money and say, hey, God, I'm going to direct this portion of it, you know, to good things, or give a part of your time, part of your week. You know, those are all good things. But being a servant means you're not in charge anymore. It means that you're no longer calling the shots of where you're going to give that and how you're going to give it. It means you're no longer in charge of your own skills. Yeah, you have skills, but you step up. If you see a circumstance and a situation or a person in front of you, it doesn't matter what you think needs to be done or your agenda is. When God gives you direction through His Word or just through an impression, you don't follow your own commands anymore. You see, this last Friday, it was a really big wedding day, by the way. I don't know if you noticed. Everybody's wanting to get married on 11-11-11. I guess the guys didn't want to forget the anniversary, right? So you had a number of requests for that day. I performed a ceremony that evening, and beautiful ceremony. A couple of young students had in our student ministry way, way back. Yeah, a number of years. It makes me feel old when I do these things. And so, you know, but I'm always amazed. Every time I perform a ceremony, when two young lives come together, and I always ask the husband, wife, the fiancés, before they get married, I say, you know, why do you want to marry each other? I mean, I said, Lindsay, why Jared? Of all the guys out there, what was it about him? Maybe there's other girls or guys in your life. I don't know. You know, Jared, why Lindsay? I mean, why would you want to choose her? I mean, not that she wasn't beautiful and everything, but I mean, just why? And so I, you know, share this with me, and I incorporate that into the ceremony. It's always interesting to me because it always has to do with how, you know, I want my life to be bent to your life. I want to serve you. I want to fulfill needs in your life. I want to be that for you. I want to kind of let go of myself and put you ahead of myself. And I always come to that place of saying, you know, where do we lose that? I mean, if you're in a marriage or been in a marriage, where do we lose that? I mean, you know, when I do a wedding, I have very few restrictions. I mean, I don't care what songs you sing. I don't care if you want to read in here or there. There's very few things I require in a ceremony. There's a couple things, though, if you're going to do them, you're going to do them right. And one is the unity candle. You know, unity candle is this idea of two separate candles that represent our lives, and it's this merging, this joining of our two lives together. We light the candle, put those candles back, and I'm like, when you put those candles out, you're blowing those stinking things out. Those things are going out. You're, even though it's a symbol, you're saying, hey, I'm forgoing. I'm letting go of myself. I'm realizing that I submit myself to my spouse now mutually. And some of us are like, well, oh man, I don't know if I like that. Well, that's probably why you're divorced right now. Let me be honest. It's probably why you're struggling in your marriage. And you're like, well, man, if I don't take care of my needs, then I'm going to get taken advantage of. You see, the beauty of a healthy marriage is two partners not being worried about being taken advantage of, fully submitting themselves to meeting the needs of the other spouse. And it's mutual, to where one another's needs just continue to be met. It's like a cycle. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I don't know where we lose that. In 15 years, I mean, think about, you know, all the conversations I've had with people as a pastor, people that are struggling in their marriage, that are even divorced, and I know the pain of that. And in nearly everyone, I can kind of go back and I can say, you know, somewhere there was a breakdown in saying, my life is about serving my spouse. And there's at some point a turn to beginning to be about seeking to just meet my needs. In everyone. I mean, when my marriage is in the tank, and it is at times. I mean, I'm not perfect. There's times where there's a rift between. It's usually because I'm trying to meet my own needs. See, when it comes to serving, we're always looking for the big, the grand. We're looking for the prestigious, and that's not where it's found. It's often found in the simple, in the everyday, in these small little ordinary moments where we see something and we're like, oh man, I see a circumstance, I see a situation, I see a person, and I put my agenda, my list aside, because I don't give myself orders anymore. I receive them from God. Well, God nudges me, I meet it. You know, Jesus answered a question. He answered that question, why? Why do we serve? Why not be in charge of our lives? I mean, why surrender? Why take on the role of a servant and make ourselves available to others? And he answered this right after he washed his disciples' feet, right after he said to them, hey, go do what I'm doing for you right now. In fact, here's what he says. I don't know if you remember or not. Here's what he says. He says, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. And it's interesting because the word blessed in the Bible, we have a lot of pictures of blessed. Blessed actually means, in the scriptural sense, happy. It means over the top. It means over exhilarated. It means full of joy. It means when you lose control of yourself, I mean, you're going to experience some exhilaration in meeting the needs, serving someone else. Something just wonderful happens when we do that. In fact, Greg Boyd, kind of an emerging theologian, great Christian thinker on the scene right now, author, pastor, he says, I've become convinced that remaining aware of God's presence is the single most important task in the life of every follower, every soldier of Jesus. And what he's saying right here is if we're aware of the person in front of us, the circumstance in front of us, not about our to-do list, not about what we think our day needs to look like, but he says, if I'm aware in every moment of every situation, what needs to be done right there, that's the most important task as a soldier. See, the only life you have to surrender is the one you live every moment. Every moment. Every moment. And we serve in these small little ordinary ways. These moments, they become sacred. And they begin to expand our capacity. They begin to bring strength to us. They begin to develop this capacity for love that takes us to a whole different place. We don't have to worry any longer about being taken advantage of because, man, we will report to a different commanding officer. You know, one of the reasons around here that we are really big on serving, really big on volunteering is because, you know, it's a big deal. And it's not because we have slots to fill or you know, schedules to keep up. I mean, I always tell my team leaders, man, having holes in your schedule is a good thing because it means there's opportunities for others to serve. Because you see, serving combats one of the greatest problems in our world. Somebody asked me a few months ago, what's the greatest problem in our world today? Is it sex, drugs, rock and roll? You know, what is it? You know what I came up with? Selfishness. Selfishness. You think of nearly every problem in the world, selfishness is at the core. When you serve, you become selfless. Step by step, moment by moment, you become selfless.